Welcome to the Premier Foods Quarter Three Interim Management Statement Conference Call. My name is Sarah, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing the call over to Gavin Darby to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Good morning to you all. Gavin here, Premier Foods CEO. I'm joined by Alistair, our new CFO. I thought I'd just open the meeting by rattling through some opening comments and then clearly get through to Q&A. You'll have seen our IMS, which we issued earlier this morning. The headlines here really are that underlying sales, while they were down 3.2%, that was really driven by one primary factor, which is very strong and hot weather climatically in July and August, which certainly dampened, as I'll demonstrate later, more specifically some of our categories. And I guess the general environment of ongoing intense competition. Now, more specifically, our power brands, which is where our focus is, as you all know, grew 2% in the period despite July, and we're up 3.3% year on year, so we're comfortable that that is another solid and consistent performance. We made a lot of progress, and we pretty well finished all the work we've done in terms of restructuring our bread business, and as I'll talk on later, we're very comfortable with the progress we're making on a lot of really rather important strategic priorities that we outlined at the half year. I'll come back to those in more detail too. So turning to the grocery business first, I don't really want to overly focus on the weather other than the fact that in July and August it did affect particularly our savoury categories. As an example, the stocks and gravies category, which is important to Premier, as you all know, was down 25% in revenue in the month of July, and that inevitably had an impact on our sales, the same but to a lesser degree impact on cooking sauces and our easy eating categories. We've got a number of brands across those two as well. So that certainly was a drag at the front end of the quarter in terms of our power brand growth. And I suppose the only other brand I would talk about is it definitely affected the growth of Home Fries, which is in the cooking sauce category as well. So it affected some of our support brands very much as well. You know, as we really came out of that period, the front end of the quarter, we started investing in our brands again. We, for instance, launched Oxo Shaken Flavor, which is another example of us innovating. We've talked about innovation recently, and that's stretching the Oxo brand, you know, to the left and the right of the historical definition of its category, kind of competing in adjacent categories for sales. We also were on air with Sharwood's and Bachelor's. Now, in the quarter, interestingly, we had a disproportionately better and good performance with our sweet categories. They were, on the one hand, the categories are less affected by the strength of the weather in the early part, but we are in both Ambrosia in particular, all the way through the year, having a very strong year, and it was enhanced by the launch of Devon Dream, Ambrosia Devon Dream, during the quarter, which of course is more summer focused, and that was timely. I have to say, though, I would focus on Mr. Kipling. Many of you have pressed me in the last months about what we're doing with cake and Kipling, and we consciously had a very quiet first half, but we had a strong quarter. We were in strong volume and revenue growth in the quarter for Kipling, which is exciting because we've got some very big plans for Kipling in the first half of next year. So our sweet categories did well, and in totality, although some of these categories were affected by the weather at the beginning of the quarter, the key thing is that our market share in total was up. We grew share strongly in our sweet categories, and in total our share grew. I think that's the ultimate measure of consumer strength, irrespective of the size of the market. So we also, as I said, continue to invest. I talked about getting smarter at the way we spend our media money. Have to come back to that later. And we've had three brands on air in the quarter. So turning to bread, we're pretty well finished now, I'm glad to say, with the significant heavy lifting associated with the restructuring. We've closed the three bakeries, two mills, taken a lot of capacity out, and we expect that the restructuring costs associated with that will be in line with the 28 million that we had previously communicated. The bread business now, our focus on the bread business is very much more back to the marketplace, and we're very encouraged by the way our share was trending in the quarter. We are particularly pleased with the fact that we have a very strong position in the largest retail in UK. We're number one in three of the top four retailers. And if you look at Tesco in particular, you'll see significantly expanded distribution for Hovis, both in their main stores and contrary to some of the press comments early in the quarter, rather than a reversal in their express format, actually a significant expansion for Hovis. So I suppose the other thing I would say in terms of bread would be a broad comment, a general comment on milling, not an area that Premier has talked much about in the past, but we did take two mills out of the total industrial capacity of the industry, and the objective there was to take out spare capacity, and I think the encouragement is that the early signs, but really quite definite signs, are that less capacity is leading to better margins in the milling business, and that will be important going forward. Now, moving perhaps to our key strategic priorities, just very quickly, you know that I have a big personal focus on taking complexity out of business. One good example is less SKUs. We took out 270. That's equivalent to 15% of our grocery portfolio. We've continued to drive down our number of suppliers as part of that rationalization. We've got to the point now where, quite impressively, in my view, 83% of our total annualized supply expenditure is now with our biggest 250 lead suppliers. And that was against the background of more than 3,000 suppliers at the half year. So we're making good progress there. We've also been focusing in an area that I haven't talked about much previously, which is grocery logistics. We've moved from three warehouses to two, and therefore both those warehouses now provide RDC capabilities. We can serve basically all our products to customers from both distribution centres. So we have lower costs and we have higher service in grocery distribution. We talked about in the IMS and frankly in my strategy in the future expanding our sales internationally. This is something very much for the future. I wouldn't want to over egg this at this point, but we did announce that we have recently signed a 10-year partnership with Swire to distribute Ambrosia rice pudding pots in China, and that will have a positive effect in the first half of next year, and we're talking to them about some other brands. So moving on from to the financial side, net debt, we see unchanged recurring free cash flow remaining in the 50 to 70 million range. We've closed, which is worth note, our defined benefit system as a company with very significant financial pension liabilities. It is important that we cap those liabilities, so we have closed in this quarter the participation in the DB system, and now all current and new employees will be offered a DC system, a DC pension scheme in the future. So I guess in terms of summary wrapping up, we feel it was a solid quarter. People often turn to me and remind me that it's consistency and predictability that they'd like to see in the Premier today and the future, and we feel that we're in that place. We'd prefer to have a better July. We do see competitive intensity being high and continuing, and that is perhaps just a steady state for this industry for the foreseeable future. So with that as a summary, Alistair and I would be very happy to receive any questions. Maybe you could just remind us who you are, and over to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask your question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. Our first question comes from Robert Dickinson from Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, everyone. It's Robert Dickinson from Citi. A couple of questions from me, please. The first one is about your support brands. The performance in the third quarter was fairly weak at down 10%. Now, I know that was impacted by partly impacted by the weather and Home Pride, but I know your strategy is to try and improve the performance of the support brands through expanding into the discounter channel. The question is, how quickly do you think you can turn around the performance of those support brands and stop them from being a drag on the overall group sales growth? The second question is around your comments on the market conditions. You've highlighted that it was very competitive in the third quarter, particularly in the category of cooking sauces. Has it been a step change in the third quarter versus in the first half of the year? Could you just comment on that as well, please?
Rob, yeah, Gavin here. I'll take both those two. The support brands, we need to do two things, because really the performance of support brands over the last, I would say, 24 months has not been where I would want it to be. So the first one is to drive the support brands much harder in the discounter strategy, and that is something that's happening as we speak. So you'll begin to see a number of the packs that I'd shared for the first time at the end of July appearing in the Poundlands, Pound Savers, B&M type channels. And so that's absolutely on track. We're getting distribution towards the end of the third quarter, and you know, you'll see them appearing in really widespread fashion in quarter four. So it's the beginning of a strategy. On track, I'm very comfortable with it, and we'll press it harder and harder as we go through the next 6 months. With regard to market conditions, I actually do not see it as a step change. I think it's very much kind of it's business as usual in terms of competitive intensity. I think, Rob, if you have seen the fact that there is very little growth from most of the big retailers, three of the big four retailers last week demonstrating very modest growth. So there's not a lot of expansion. I think some companies having in the savory world having had a weak July probably tried to recover disproportionately in September, so maybe there was some extra intensity, but I actually do not see a major really change to the kind of running rate, the underlying running rate, which just remains high.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Alex Sloan from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Got a couple of questions, please. Firstly, on the strategic actions, I was hoping you could give an update on your supplier investment program that I think you launched over the summer. There's obviously been some pushback from some of your suppliers, including your media buying agency, but I was wondering if you could tell us overall how many of your 3,000 suppliers have accepted the request for £10,000 investment, and how will you be accounting for this potential windfall in 2013? Will you be taking this potential windfall into trading profit, or will it be treated as an exceptional? And secondly, just on the consumer marketing spend, I think that was down around 27% in the first half. Wondering if you could give us an indication of the level of spend or the year-on-year direction of that spend for the full year. Thanks.
Yeah, Alex, we'll split the first question in two halves, and I'll let Alistair handle the accounting piece. But you might not be surprised. I guess what I'd say on the supplier program, I'm very pleased by it. It's very important to us. It's progressing well. I'm not going to go any further than that, frankly, in terms of defining exactly where we are in terms of the 3,300 suppliers and what proportion of them have signed up and what proportion haven't. But it's a big program. We put a lot of energy behind it. There will always be some heat and fire and noise from the losers in the process. You don't tend to hear very much about the winners, from the winners, because they're going to have bigger and deeper and longer associations with Premier Foods. So that would be my summary. In terms of the accounting point, Alison?
Right, so I mean, I think you know, my view on this one is that negotiating better terms from suppliers is business as usual, and what companies like this have to do all the time, so it's not exceptional. When it gets reported depends on the nature of the deal that we do with the individual supplier. So if the improved terms that we have negotiated relates to 2013, then obviously we'll show that benefit in 2013. If it's something that we've negotiated which represents an improvement for 2014, then you'll see it in the numbers for 2014, and that's how it's going to flow through into the accounts.
In terms of the consumer marketing, Alex, your second question, we have continued to invest in consumer marketing in the third quarter, as I touched on, with three brands on air, particularly behind the innovations of Devon Dream, Oxo Shake and Flavour. We candidly continue to balance the amount of consumer marketing based on our overall financial progress. You would expect that from Premier Foods. We are in a slightly different place than with the capital structure we have, so we balance that carefully. We will see for sure our marketing spend when we finish the year. The second half, I suspect, roughly in balance of the first half, and we will see our spend significantly ahead of where we were 2 years ago, very significantly ahead of where we were 2 years ago, and we will see, you know, the efficiency, which is something what I focus on more than sometimes just the pounds or dollars, which is, you know, the GRP, the amount of consumer impact you have that we get for every pound that we spend, and considerably higher. So that would be my summary on consumer marketing.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Darren Shirley from Shore Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, gents. A couple of questions from me, please. You've lifted your skirt a little bit in terms of the growth of the logistics, the rationalisation of depots and so on. Can you give us any colour in terms of the potential cost savings to come from that, and whether there's any cash benefits from a working capital perspective? And also, just on input costs, there's obviously a fair bit of deflation about in terms of input costs, particularly going into your bread category. How do you see that panning out over the next 9 to 12 months? Is that something you'd expect to be deflationary for the category, boost promotional activity, etc.? Just your thoughts on that would be helpful.
I mean, on the logistics, to be very clear, so we've gone from, during the year, four distribution centres, we'll be down to two. We used to have one big central distribution centre, just one in the centre of the UK, which could supply the entire Premier Foods grocery range, ambient grocery range, to all customers, but the others were like secondary depots. So now we've moved from effectively four, beginning of the year, through three to two, and so the second RDC is in the northwest, and that allows us to supply our customers with the entire ambient grocery range from either one of the two that remain. Therefore, we do have lower costs, and therefore we have higher service levels. We're actually accelerating or shortening the commitment that we will make in terms of the time between when a customer orders for some of our major customers and when we deliver. So that's all very positive for service. I'm not sure we're in a position to be absolutely precise in terms of the cost benefit. I mean, clearly there are some cost benefits, but frankly, just as much as that, there are some very significant service benefits. And it's a combination of the two. In terms of input costs, I think input costs generally, Alistair, we would describe as quite benign generally. I think that obviously in the world of wheat, a year ago we had a kind of perfect storm of very poor quality wheat and lack of supply, which is bad for the productivity of our mills and bad for the productivity of our bakeries. So we're a year on. We're in a situation whereby we have plentiful supply. We have high quality from the UK. The wheat that we did get from the UK harvest, we're capable, and we are buying from both continental Europe and the UK. So we're in a good supply position. And you know that is feeding through, or will feed through, particularly in the fourth quarter, hopefully to our manufacturing productivity and manufacturing efficiency in both milling and baking. In terms of the input costs on bread, well, I think they're already probably reflected in the market pricing. You see, if you look at the markets, pretty aggressive pricing as the third quarter unfolded. You see many of the brands being, the big brands, Hovis being an example in Tesco at the minute, priced at £1 for some of its, some of our core SKUs. So I think the benefit, you might argue, in input costs is reflected now and has been from early on in the quarter in the consumer pricing. Now, there may be some benefit in milling. I touched on that earlier, where the supply in the market has been reduced by Premier's actions, and so we will see, and I made a general reference to margins, with less capacity it's possible that the more benign input costs in that sector will come through in better margins, which would be very good for the Premier milling business and for the industry.
Okay, so I mean, just to get that straight, then, I mean, in terms of what you're saying in terms of bread pricing, some of the aggressive pricing at the moment, you don't sense their short-term pricing there may be set for the next 9 to 12 months.
I think that's a reasonably good assumption. Yeah, I mean, I think the input costs have fallen a lot against a year ago, as you agreed with your question, and we've tended to reflect them in our promotional strategies, and you know, our market share is strong and growing as we've actually had reducing costs during the quarter, and hence, you know, if you look at the support, just I'll give you a specific example, the significant support that Tesco are giving disproportionately to Hovis, you know, in the last month or so. So I think they're in the price, and I suspect that the market is, the consumer price is now pretty well settled at a lower level, reflecting the A, the promotional intensity, but B, the lower import cost.
Okay, that's very clear, thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mike Dennis from Cantor Fitzgerald. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Quite clear who that was. Could you
it's Mike Dennis here.
Hello, Mike.
Hi. Just a quick question. Going back to Tesco, in terms of how you actually secured the distribution into Tesco, because I was reading that Tesco about to delist you out of Express, and now you've got that business back, and your commentary was that you weren't going to chase volumes in the market. So it seems with other main estate retailers, your sales are relatively flat, so your volumes are all coming out of Tesco. I was just wondering how you managed to do that in terms of pricing with Tesco, and also if you've procured better terms from your suppliers. I'm assuming that say two-thirds agree with you, that's £20 million. Why haven't your, if you didn't pay for Tesco, why has your profits not gone up by the £20 million benefit from the procurement on that side? Those are basically my two questions.
I think you may be mixing two different points, Mike, if I can try and give a bit of clarification there. I think in terms of bread, I suppose the erroneous report about Hovis coming out of Express, and I think it was a competitor, Kingsmill, going in there, but that just proves that you shouldn't read everything you read in the press. So I will say that Hovis has been for a long, long time the number one bread brand in Tesco. So, and just gets stronger and stronger. There's nothing kind of revolutionary in that regard. We are very keen to keep investing in convenience, though. I mean, so Tesco are growing very strongly with their Express stores. But there's nothing kind of radical in terms of terms changes. It's just a question of reflection of the strength of Hovis and the strength of the relationship between Tobis at Tesco, and you should just consider that original article you're referring to as inaccurate. We knew it was inaccurate at the time, we just kept quiet about it, and it proved to be inaccurate in the event. In terms of the separate point, if I got it right, well, all I would say is that we announced at our half year that we, I believe, raised the expectations we'd have from reduced costs and less complexity by about £10 million. That was in our half year announcement, and you know, we're standing by those numbers. We expect those numbers to come through, and they were reflected in the comments we made at the half year, and a number of people on this call raised slightly their expectations of our profitability as a result. So you know, we're happy with the situation and with the way that was interpreted back in the summer.
So who paid for the 15p price difference in a loaf of bread at Tesco's, not saying their margins are going down? So I don't quite understand where that came from.
I mean, the previous, we had Darren from Short was really on the money with his previous question. The world price of wheat has fallen significantly in this last month relative to a year ago. That was the question that we just covered at some length. With the previous caller, and so you're seeing some of that reflected in retail pricing.
But the big retailers are only now asking for that back now. They weren't asking that back 6 months ago or 3 months ago. So remember, these negotiations didn't start yesterday. Tesco didn't say let's have a £1 loaf yesterday. So that wasn't true 6 months ago. So I just don't understand that. That's them asking for money now about commodity prices.
With respect, you're mixing things up here. The harvest is an annual event.
Yeah, sure.
The harvest happens in August. You get some feeling as to how the harvest, which is both a global harvest, a European harvest, and a UK harvest, how it's going. Everybody predicts, which is the reason for the previous gentleman's question, Aaron's question, predicts that as we went into the summer, the market would be much better supplied with much better quality, and that the world wheat price was trending down all the way through. So what happens is you negotiate on that basis, and eventually that is reflected in consumer pricing, and that was the reason for the question preceding you.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Darren Shirley from Shore Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello again, folks. Not on bread this time. I just wonder if you give a bit more colour around the partnership agreement with Swire. Initial volumes that's likely to involve, and the potential for other brands to be brought into that. Just a bit more colour would be appreciated.
Well, it's early days. It is, it's not going to be huge initially. I'm not going to overcall it and overhype this because that's not really my style. But it is a good step forward. Swire have really important distribution capabilities in the major cities in China. And we start with Ambrosia. We will talk to them. We are talking to them about other brands. But it's, it's a kind of steady as you go. It's intriguing, but it's not. I wouldn't want to overstress the volumes or the impact on the business. It's they will tell you, and I know quite a lot about doing business in China, that you do things in China in steady and measured fashion. And so we will start in Shanghai. We'll start in a range of important supermarkets, but we won't go beyond those supermarkets, and we won't go beyond Shanghai until we're really confident we've got the right kind of mix of pricing and the proposition, etc. So it's exciting, it's intriguing. I'm sure in the journalistic world people will talk about rights to China and various other intriguing headlines, the cult to Newcastle or Sand to the Arabs type of parallels, but Darren, it's something for the future, and I just don't want to overstress it in terms of the impact on the economics of the business at this point.
Okay, that's fair enough. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Pablo Zuanic from Liberum Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Look, two quick questions. When you talk about the competition intensity, if we just concentrate on the grocery portfolio in terms of your power brands there, can you just add some color in terms of where is it more intense and where is less intense? I know you've talked about that there hasn't been a step up change, but you can add some color in terms of where we see more or less competition across the power brands. And the second question now, with Alistair coming in, a new CFO, does that mean that in a way the company could be looking at a further review of your business portfolio, and that perhaps we could see more divestitures that had been expected, say, 6 months ago? Thanks.
Pablo, on the first question, it's really a fairly generalistic response. I mean, there's no particular brand or sector that is seeing, which, if that's behind your question, a disproportionate change in intensity. I think what we see is, if you look at our retailer partners, the growth is very difficult. I think what, 3 of the 4 big retailers last week had really quite modest growth in the numbers that many of you reported. And that's a reflection of consumers who are, on the one hand, reading all sorts of positive stuff, macroeconomic stuff, GDP, even some consumer optimism indexes which move positively, but it doesn't come through when I talk to my retailer partners yet in any fashion. So it's a fairly flat volume environment, and therefore people compete aggressively for their share of the flat market. And it's no more specific in sweet than it is in savoury, or in brand A than brand B, or in customer C or customer D. It's just a general level of high intensity. And Alistair, on the second question.
Well, I think Pablo, you shouldn't draw the inference that because there's a new CFO that there's going to be a change of strategy. I mean, I think you know the background, which is that Mark left for personal reasons. I'm picking that up, and learning my way around the business. But I think you would be wrong in assuming that just because the CFO has changed that the company is going to change its strategy.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. We currently have no questions. So as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 now. We have a question from the line of Antonio Casari from Northlight. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I was wondering if you can give us an update on your negotiation around the deficit on the pension plan scheme.
Well, there's nothing new that I can say relative to where we were. The valuation date was the end of the financial year last year, so December. The actuaries are quite well advanced, as you would expect at this stage, but we don't have anything further to say at this point as to where that's coming to.
No indication, not even in terms of timing.
I would imagine it will be relatively soon. We'd be talking months, not another 6 months. So we would want to get on with this. If not by the year end, then soon thereafter, I would expect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you would like to ask your question, please press *1 now. We have no further questions coming through, so I'll hand the call back over to your host for any concluding comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of your time. Hopefully that was very clear. And bye for now.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending today's conference. You may now replace your handsets.